Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, this week's lofty goal. Well, Manton, I am so happy I am not you this week.
Yeah, some days this week I also wish I wasn't me, or at least I wish I didn't have so much on my plate. I'm getting ready for CocoConf in Dallas this weekend.
Oh, cool.
And I'm really excited about it, but I'm also kind of scrambling to polish my talk, get into gear. I thought it would be a little bit easier than it is because I'm basing some of it on the talk I gave at NS Conference. And so I thought, how hard could it be? I'll take a few slides from here. I'll add some new content, throw in some more technical stuff. And so I kind of put my slides in a blender and just kind of mixed everything around and added a bunch of new stuff. But there's so many changes that it is kind of, in a lot of ways, a new talk and requires a lot of work. So trying to get ready for that, but I'm excited about going to the conference because I haven't been before, and looking forward to seeing folks that are there that maybe I haven't met before and seeing the other sessions.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be fun, and I think that it's you should be confident that you pulled it off at NS Conference. So unless you've like decided to throw out everything good about your talk and insert garbage, that's what you did, isn't it?
I definitely threw out a lot, and I'm hoping I threw out the right things, but we'll see. I think it'll be a little bit longer, and it's definitely, I wanted it to be more technical. I wanted to cover more APIs, especially more detail on Apple's in-app purchase APIs, which I kind of glossed over at NS Conference. Mm-hmm. So definitely switch things around a little bit, and I hope it'll turn out okay, but definitely have some work to do in the next few days to get that ready.
Well, that's I hope it comes together for you. That'll be fun though for folks who are going to the Dallas CocoConf to get to meet the famous Manton Reese in person. So if you're there, folks, just listen for that dulcet, ringing voice wafting across the conference hall. And it will be Manton Reese.
My talk, I think, is Saturday morning at the very beginning, and hopefully I don't put people asleep. Hopefully everyone has had a good night's sleep and can kind of stay awake, maybe with some coffee.
Now, is Saturday the first day of the show, or is it?
No, it's the last day. There's the Friday and Saturday of the main part of the conference with technical sessions. There's a few different tracks and not just technical sessions, but, regular sessions every hour. And then the day before Thursday, they have kind of all day tutorials on certain topics. So longer form. And I don't think that everyone attends Thursday is my sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually sure how that works. I'm not going to be there for that part. I'm going to be driving up to Dallas Thursday. So I'll miss some of the beginning tutorials, but then I'll be there for the rest of the core conference.
Cool. So you're going to be there. You're not going to do one of these surgical strike, famous person shows up just for his talk and then bails.
No, definitely not. I think part of the value of this stuff is hanging around and talking to people, getting feedback on the talk, and also just, giving feedback on other talks, meeting people. So no, I definitely wouldn't do that. Unfortunately, it is kind of a short trip. I mean, I'm driving up, just staying a couple nights and then coming back, but certainly, I'm hopefully staying long enough to, actually attend, the real conference and actually get something out of it as attendee, not just as a speaker.
Right. Well, now I know especially why your week is so constrained, since you're actually leaving on Thursday. You don't even have the whole week to get ready.
That's right.
So am I freaking you out?
No. Yeah, the longer we record, the more my confidence is going to go down. Now, I mean, I've got a bunch of stuff to do this week, but I think it'll come together.
Cool.
I just need to focus, and I need to not panic about all the things that I'm missing.
Well, fortunately for me, I don't have a conference. I don't have a conference to prepare for. I guess unfortunately and fortunately, it sounds like it would be fun to go, but I don't have to, practice my talk or anything this week. I managed to ship the second episode of Bit Splitting last week. So this is kind of a big wide open week for me, and I should be hammering away at new features and product ideas and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. But instead,
the curse and the glory of self-employment is a really bad combo with somebody with my personality who will follow any which interest, whichever direction, to the point of foolish exhaustion of the possibility of actually succeeding. So my foolish venture this week, well, first of all, I have to give myself a pat on the back for getting my taxes in order this year in the same calendar year as the taxes are due.
Nice.
That's a new one for me.
That's good. That's a huge accomplishment.
But the other thing I've gotten myself sidetracked with this week is doing some Safari extension. You know, this isn't the first time. I come back to this sometimes, these Safari extension ideas.
Yeah.
And this week's lofty goal is to get around the feature of Netflix streaming in Safari, mm-hmm. that when you are finished playing an episode, it ever so helpfully starts playing the next one, the next episode in the series, like 20 seconds after the credits start rolling. And I don't know if you've seen this, if you use Netflix in the browser at all, but
mostly not in the browser, mostly on the TV.
Right. Well, so this is the deal. I use a Mac Mini as my media center.
Okay.
And my son, 4 years old, knows how to navigate the Netflix kids section and like find a show, and you know, he knows which ones he's allowed to watch. And then we say, okay, Henry, you can watch one show. And he says, oh, but there's two episodes on each one. And I'm like, oh, all right, mm-hmm. all right. You can watch 2 15-minute episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we like lose track of time or something happens. And then like an hour and a half later, we're like, wait a minute, I thought you were only supposed to watch one show. And it turns out, since they glide so effortlessly from one episode to the next, there's like no natural stopping point for him.
Right. It just keeps
going.
Yeah. So I wish I could blame the technology, but unfortunately this happens for us too, but it's because my kids very quickly, when the show's over, skip to the next one before we notice.
Right. But so at least they have to do the work. They have to.
Yeah.
So yeah, Henry is old enough and smart enough to know that this is working for him. And he kind of like laughs about it when I call him on it. But Netflix is doing all the work for him.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Hacker Daddy is going to step in. And it's a little bit of a challenge, though, because the good news is this. Well, first of all, I thought, oh, no, I can't really hack this because all of the actual playback stuff happens in Silverlight. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, oh, I can't get in there and say, like, patch out this autoplay method in the JavaScript or anything. But I found, luckily, there's this initialization call for that player that actually passes a parameter that says whether or not to do that autoplayer mumbo jumbo. Yeah. And in concept, I have gotten it so that if I break in JavaScript debugger in Safari and change that parameter, then indeed it doesn't do the autoplay.
Nice.
So now I'm just hacking around with it, trying to figure out how I can actually patch out that code. It's in the main page of the Netflix playback page. And I thought this would be easy with a Safari extension, and maybe it is, but my naivete has led me to like hours now of trying to figure out how to modify the content of the page as it loads. It's like all the examples are about blocking specific sub resources. Anyway, long story short, I got this like JavaScript extension in there that's like grabbing the body of the page as soon as it loads, and then stashing it in a bogus DOM node, and then waiting until it finishes loading, and then trying to add back the body, but with slightly modified JavaScript content.
Tricky, yeah. Safari extensions are cool. I had a lot of fun doing one for TweetMarker.
Yeah.
When Twitter.com loads, you know, I insert a little mark this tweet link next to retweet and favorite and all that stuff. And it was fun. It was neat to just, yeah, play with the DOM and just kind of intercept things. I'd like to do more of that. And I've gotten a bunch of feedback from people about, you know, they want a Chrome extension and so forth. But the, you know, with this whole RSS thing, I've been trying different RSS readers, and Feedly was the one I tried last week, and it is implemented as a Safari extension. They also have an iPhone app and probably Android and everything else. But I found that because they did a Safari extension, there's like a little button added to the Safari toolbar. And even though it's really just a web app, even though there's a ton of JavaScript and a lot of it's really fast and only on the client, just because it's an extension and there's this button that's added, I find I'm using it a lot, maybe more than if I had downloaded an app and had to launch it myself. Because every time I'm in Safari, I see this little button. And of course, I could get rid of it, but it's still there and I see this little button. And so I've been clicking on it, of course, and reading RSS. And so yeah, it works. It's a good technology for this kind of thing.
I hate that, Manton. I hate it when the web apps win.
Yeah.
You know? It's just
web apps are getting better.
Grumble, grumble. Hey, speaking of web apps getting better, did you see this forecast.io?
I did. Fancy.
Geez, speaking of make a desktop developer cry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right. It's not fair.
Yeah. And so this is from the guys who did Dark Sky? Is that the name of it?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's obviously, you know, I guess their background is more iOS development. I'm not sure, but taking that and doing something great for the web, very cool.
Yeah, it was one of those situations where I didn't... I'm such a grump about, you know, defending desktop and mobile native stuff that I was just like... My eyes were peeled to see what was substandard about the experience.
Right. Looking out
and
for
I'm like, wait
Flickr
a minute.
Loading problems.
And then I'm like, this is smooth. This is like responsive. I'll go back to my desktop cave now.
Yeah. Well, of course, the good news is that anything you can do on the web, you can also do in a native app, even if it means embedding web and JavaScripts into the app sometimes.
That's right. We're always going to be one step ahead, even if they manage to do impressive stuff in the web. But you know, I like to applaud it because I certainly admire working within those constraints. And when you come up with something that good with the constraints, it's just like, geez, wow. Imagine what they could do with a native app.
True. Yeah. It's impressive. Okay, this week, we have a new sponsor. It's App Design Vault. Developers are not designers, so we either forget about the design altogether or spend hours in Photoshop coming up with a subpar design. But with App Design Vault templates, you can now get a stunning look and feel for your apps, and you don't even have to spend thousands of dollars on a designer, which is good, especially if you are on a tight budget. And so they've done something cool. They've actually have a special page for Core Intuition listeners. It's appdesignvault.com/core intuition. And they've taken the idea of what they do, and we'll talk about that in more detail, and they've made a custom app and template based on actually one of my apps, Tweet Library. So kind of a Twitter app and look and experimenting with different themes and styles. And they have an example project there. And you can download it and try it out to get an idea of the kind of resource that App Design Vault provides.
That's really cool. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, of course this is a product that developers... It's kind of like so many of the questions and answers on like developer mailing lists is like, oh, where can I get a good designer? And obviously some things you're going to want to have custom designed, but what's cool about what Tope, the guy at App Design Vault, has done here is just put together a bunch of very common like styles, and they're really nicely done. And then some of these styles he actually applied, as Manton was saying, to Tweet Library. And when you download this example, you can actually open it up in Xcode and run and see just exactly what the different variations look like in the simulator or on your phone. And what do you think, Manton? Does this seem like he's captured the Tweet Library You know, it's like, I mean, it's a list of tweets that you scroll around.
Yep. And he got, you know, he copied kind of some basic stuff from the toolbar. And yeah, obviously it's a Twitter app. So there's tweets and even little profile images and the date, you know, 2 days ago this was posted. And so it's very cool. That template itself has a few different designs. And in the blog post, he goes through them. And in the code, you can just, there's a little theme file where you can just comment out and enable different styles. But basically, with this collection of these templates, there's all these custom styles, like where the buttons, table view cells, toolbars, it has this custom design and look with, you know, whatever gradient or texture, and it's consistent. So if you want a certain look in your app, you can get one of these, and then you basically are going to, it's a quick kind of jump start to get that look everywhere in your app without saying, okay, I'm starting from nothing, and now I've got to have this custom style here and here and here. This is a quick way to get up and running with a certain kind of look in your app. And then from there, of course, you can build on top with whatever your app needs to do that's way beyond sort of the template prototype. But I've been impressed. Like you said, it's an Xcode project, all the resources, Photoshop files to Retina images, and actual code. So like in the tweet library example, you know, there's like a model class, like with a tweet with different fields of, you know, different properties of the username and the tweet text. And so it's kind of this little framework for building the app and getting started quickly. But it's not just a static design. There's actually code behind all of this.
Right. And it's all like so customizable that you could take it and then really make it unique to your app. So you don't have to worry that you're going to have every other app out there looking like yours that uses this. It's just a great starting point. And these themes are, they run from about $50 to $90 each, depending on which theme you need. Go over to appdesignvault.com/coreintuition. Take a look at the example they made for Tweet Library, and then go check out the gallery to see if there are any themes in there that will work for your next app. Thanks a lot, App Design Vault, for sponsoring the show.
So we have a comment from Glassboard from Matt Stevens that I wanted to point out because it's a follow-up to something we discussed previously when we talked about PowerNap as part of new APIs. And he says, for anyone curious about PowerNap, there aren't any public APIs, but all apps do run briefly when it kicks in, so we get some automatic benefits. Session 711 from WWDC 2012 has some info, and he also wrote up a blog post about this that we'll link in the show notes. And so thanks for commenting about that, Matt. And it reminded me that I was checking out a WWDC video just a couple days ago, getting ready for my talk at CocoaConf. I wanted to review some information. And there's so many videos that actually have not gone back and either watched again or watched at all. And I missed more sessions last year than I kind of remember missing. And so it's good to point out that all those videos are there from last year, the year before that. It's a great resource still. And yeah, listeners, and I'm certainly reminding myself of the same thing as I say this, should definitely continue to go check those out when there's some issue that you're running into or some technical topic that you want more information about. Don't forget about those videos.
Yeah, I always forget about that. And as you know, I'm not the best, I'm not the most studious WWDC attendee anyway. And then I forget about the videos. And then somebody will say, you know, the great thing about the videos is there's often stuff covered there that never makes its way into documentation or yep. And never makes it maybe even into discussions on email lists, except for an occasional, you know, oh, you need to go check out this session. Right. And it's just, it's great to have those there. And I often also overlook, them being there. I'll be beating my head. So for example, I'm probably beating my head on this Netflix Safari extension. Uh-huh. I probably go to this video on WWDC and they'll say like, well, if you want to intercept and change the content of a page, and I'll be like, oh God, I spent hours working on that.
Using this example from the Netflix website, we will show you. Yeah. No, I'm the same way. Cause a lot of times I'll just dive into the header and look at an API. And if I figure it out just from the header, that's great. But I may actually be missing something. I may be missing the full documentation, which provides some insight that will help me. And then beyond that, I may be missing the session from WDC or something else. So it's a good thing to dig deeper sometimes.
It's just like me, Manton, to spend 4 hours beating my head against a problem in code mm-hmm. when I could have spent an hour reading or watching documentation. Ah, well, anyway, speaking of WWDC, we are all still on pins and needles waiting for Apple's announcement. As of today, Tuesday, we don't know, right? They may have, I guess they may have announced a few minutes ago while we're recording, and we will therefore be excluded. But I know one person who will probably be going to WWDC this year, who has been at many WWDCs in the past, but was not so guaranteed to go this year because he had left Apple. And that's our friend Mike Jurowitz.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently the fear of missing WWDC was enough to lure him back. And he announced yesterday on April Fool's, granted, mm-hmm. that he was returning to Apple.
But no joke. Yep. He's actually doing that. It's funny. I was about to say that, you know, that's the guaranteed way to get into the conferences, just to go work at Apple. But that actually may not be true for some people. I know that, you know, they have a separate line for Apple employees sometimes. If it's crowded, might not even get in. So,
you know, if he was going back to his old job, then certainly he would be at WWDC.
Yes.
Because it was so tied to developer relations. But yeah, if he just went back to be a developer, an engineer or something, then good luck. It's getting harder and harder for people to get up there. I bet they'd, yeah. I bet they'd make an exception for Jury.
Yeah. Though. Yeah. No, I'm sure. But, and so right before he announced that, in the kind of the week or two in the middle between jobs, he has had a ton of really great blog posts, and we'll link these up. There was a 5-part series on App Store pricing, which is based on the talk that we mentioned from both Singleton last year and also NS Conference last month, and really fantastic. It's probably, I said in my blog post today, that it's probably the best post I've ever seen that takes a conference session and like repurposes it into, you know, a long written,
yeah,
written post. So really good. And also some other ones even before that, really good one on features and deciding what features you actually need in your app and how it's okay to just have a smaller limited feature set as long as you get those right and you polish those. So some really good stuff in there.
Yeah. And the it's great that it's such a good adaptation of a conference talk, but it also helps that the talks themselves were so celebrated and respected as having great information delivered in an understandable way. So for all the people out there who weren't so lucky as we were to see his talks, this is your chance to go out there and try to absorb some of that advice and wisdom.
Yep. Now the next question is he going to be allowed to blog anymore? Because I've really enjoyed reading all the posts. I hope he's somehow in the discussions about joining Apple again. Maybe he got some
caveats.
You can, you can blog still.
My guess is that he has zero permission to blog about technical mm-hmm. Apple related subjects. And that's why he got these 5 massive posts out the door. Yep. And you could tell him, and he was posting them like 30 minutes apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and then he posted the last one and he's like, all right, time for bed. And then the next morning, a few hours later,
right.
It was like
new job
tweeted about his new job. Yeah. So I don't think so. It's, you know, frankly, Manton, that's one of the things that still really bugs me about Apple is this whole it's a weird thing. It came out of nowhere over the years. And now it just seems to be so widespread, this idea that you can't blog if you work at Apple. And it, you know, obviously when I worked there, most people weren't blogging, period. But,
mm-hmm.
I remember over the years it came up first. It always just depended on whose management chain a particular person was in. Because obviously there are some people who blogged over the years with no concern about it. And then other people mm-hmm. were just terrified to do it. And it's right. sort of a combination probably of who your management chain is. And I guess probably sort of like how likely or how vulnerable you feel personally to the consequences. Obviously, you know, Steve Jobs could have blogged if he wanted to.
Right.
I think there's some old timers at Apple who maybe sort of blog here and there without too much concern about it because they feel confident that they, you know, are not going to get, I don't know, dicked around, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it's tough. I'd like to think that there'd be a kind of a middle ground where more people could blog without it really affecting Apple, without Apple having to get serious about stopping people. But I also respect that, not just the secrecy, but also the idea that, you know, if tons of people are blogging, it really dilutes the message and it complicates things. And Apple is all about like this very simplified view. You know, whether you go into a store or whether you go into the website or go into a keynote, very, very controlled message. And so if you've got 1,000 people blogging, it makes that messier, right? It's not a clear, simple message that Apple likes to put out there.
True, but they don't have to all be blogging with like a headline over there in the banner of their blog that mm-hmm. says, you know,
right.
from famous Apple engineer, Joe Schmo.
Right.
You know, and like a good example of that, I think, is Bill Bumgarner's blog, which mm-hmm. is just a, you know, he hasn't been doing much lately with it, but over the years, he's an example of somebody who blogged quite a bit in spite of working at Apple. Mm-hmm. And there's just a ton of great technical contributions to the developer community that come from a guy who happens to have huge brains, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. brains, and happens to work at Apple.
And, yeah. And it's technical content, but it's outside any specific product. So I think it's a lot easier to allow that kind of stuff. It's valuable. It's great. He can draw on his experience from Apple, but it exists kind of outside, you know, normal day-to-day Apple stuff.
And on that note, you know, maybe Mike Jurowitz will continue blogging, but if there were any types of posts that would be kind of obviously not appropriate, it would be something like this 5-part series where he's essentially advising people how to interact with the App Store. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just like you should price your apps higher. This is my analysis of the Apple App Store and how developers should be, you know, behaving on it.
Right.
And it's kind of obvious then that, maybe Apple employees shouldn't be making posts like that. But just kind of like general technical wisdom, and certainly any blogs that are totally unrelated to technical stuff. You know,
right.
if you work at Apple and you want to do a baseball blog, that should not be an issue. And I think for mm-hmm. some people, they still consider it one.
Well, obviously, I wish all the best of luck to Michael, and hope everything's great. Can't wait to hear more about what he is doing there now.
Yeah, I think that's still under wraps as far as I know. I sort of pinged him on app.net trying to get an answer, and he's back to his old secret quiet self. So
cool. All right, well, it's good talking to you this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast. As always, you can rate us or comment in iTunes or send a message or question on Twitter, app.net. That's at Corint, or in the Glassboard. And if you don't know how to find that, I believe the invite code is Corint. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
And good luck to you, Manton, on your talk this Saturday. And folks, if you do go to the Dallas CocoConf, make sure you go up and say hi to Manton, because he's not as scary as he sounds on the radio.
Yes, please do. I'd love to say hi to as many people as I can. So.
All right. Take care, Manton.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.